teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or his particular some particular aspects of his teachings. And I found something that I have read many times and I have always very much been intrigued with. So I thought that it would be valuable to share this also with you. This is a quote where he is talking about three things. He's talking about Krishna Naam, the holy name, Krishna Dham, the holy abode of Krishna, and Krishna Kam, or the transcendental desires of Krishna. And he speaks very interestingly about the connection between these three: Krishna Naam, Krishna Dham, and Krishna Kam. We'll wait until everything gets set up. So, before speaking and hearing from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I'd like to read a little quote from the introduction of the Nectar of Devotion. Srila Prabhupada says, "Those who are cultivating spiritual life and executing devotional service are always engaged in activity. Such activity can be performed with the body or with the mind. Thinking, feeling, and willing are all activities of the mind. And when we will do something, the activities come to be manifest by the gross bodily senses. Thus, in our mental activities, we should always try to think of Krishna and try to plan how to please him, following in the footsteps of the great acharyas and the personal spiritual master. There are activities of the body, activities of the mind, and activities of speech. A Krishna conscious person engages his words in preaching the glories of the Lord. This is called kirtan. And by his mind, a Krishna conscious person always thinks of the activities of the Lord as he is speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or engaging in his various pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees. In this way, one can always think of the activities and pastimes of the Lord. This is the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. Similarly, we can offer many services with our bodily activities, but such activities must be in relationship to Krishna. This relationship is established by connecting oneself with a bona fide spiritual master who is a direct representative of Krishna in disciplic succession. Therefore, the execution of Krishna conscious activities with the body should be directed by the spiritual master and then performed with faith. The connection with the spiritual master is called initiation. From the date of initiation by the spiritual master, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. So here Srila Prabhupada is describing three different levels of activity. There is the activities of one's speaking, then there is the activities of one's mind, and then there are one's physical activities. And he's explaining how one can spiritualize these three levels of activities. One spiritualizes his speaking activities by speaking about Krishna. But one will not be able to speak very much about Krishna unless one has a mental cultivation taking place. Because whatever is in one's mind, it automatically becomes the topic, the subject matter that comes out in our words. So one has to think about Krishna. And in order to think about Krishna, one cannot think about Krishna in an abstract way. In the same way you cannot think about air for very long, or you cannot think about sunlight for very long, because there is not very many characteristics of air or sunlight to attract your attention for a longer period of time. So one has to actually think of Krishna as a person. One has to know him, know his activities. And finally, he explains that one can make the activities of one's life service to Krishna by having them directed by somebody who is an authority on Krishna's behalf. Because that person will say to you, yes, I think this is Krishna's desire that you do this now, and it will be Krishna's desire that you do that. So there are three things that we were speaking, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking of in a different context, but somehow they bear some similarity to what Srila Prabhupada is speaking of here. So as we speak of these three things, we will see in the end we can bring them back and see their relevance in relation to what Srila Prabhupada is telling us. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says there are three objects of our worship and service. Krishna's name, Krishna Naam, Krishna's Dham, Krishna Dham, and the desire of Krishna, or Krishna Kam. So I'm going to read, but it's difficult to follow very intently when one is hearing something for the first time. So then I will go back and summarize some of the points that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is making. So please try to listen carefully, because his sentences are quite intricate, so you have to have your attention on what he's saying. The service of the holy name, the holy Dham, or transcendental abode, and the supreme desire of Godhead is available to all of us. And there is no other means to escape from the clutches of worldly inclinations for any creature than by service of the holy name. The service of the name enables humanity to free itself from the hold of all superstitions and wrong ideas, and to become rooted in the service of the desire of Krishna, Krishna Kam. The service of the Dham frees one from the jaws of illusion, Mayavad, and the terribly wrong theory that a jiva or a creature is himself God or master, and that there is no existence except in the human imagination of the holy name, form, attributes, pastimes and paraphernalia of Godhead. The service of Krishna's desire saves one from the hand of the great foe of hankering for one's own sensuous gratification. One is thereby freed from serving the earthly passions and may be installed in the service of the desire of the transcendental Lord. Now he's going to speak a little more about serving Krishna's desire. As the consequence of putting on this gross physical body, base desires for the gratification of physical senses have cropped up. And in consequence of the coil of the subtle material or mental body, indifference to the service of Godhead has grown, and mental speculations are ever driving us in the opposite direction. But this wrong direction is turned towards right if the inclination and taste for the service of Krishna's desire dawns forth. The service of Krishna's desire is gained when we take to the service of Sri Dham. So we hear often by Krishna chanting Nam, but he says no, it comes from the Dham. The Sanskrit word Dham has different lexiconic meanings, but in the sense in which it is understood by the wise or the seers, it means that region or place where there is no scope of any desire or injury or envy or mortality, and which is ever self-effulgent, spiritual and blissful. The service of Sri Dham will lead us, as a matter of course, to the service of the holy name and the holy desire of Krishna. Relationship with Sri Dham being established, the means of the service of the holy name soon brings one to the goal of the service of Krishna's desire. And this is the only object of life. Relationship with the worldly abode, this is the Dham, Nam, Gram. Gram means one's family and all one's relatives and all of the Gramyakata, all the things that now absolutely fill our consciousness in this world. These things, the relationship with the worldly abode and hankering after ordinary worldly life, will soon cease for one who realizes his relationship with the Dham. The only spiritual entity or reality who has mercifully descended to this world, now he's speaking about Nam, the only spiritual entity or reality who has mercifully descended to this world is the holy name of Krishna, who ever dwells in his transcendental realm. That transcendental locality where he manifests himself and displays his activities is called Sri Dham. By the service of Sri Dham, the service of the holy name, and all holy desires of Krishna is attained. Mere pretense to serve the name apart from the service of the Dham and living aloof from all relations therewith does never lead to the goal of service of the holy desire of Krishna. Now I'll go through this with you step by step after, but I wanted to present the whole first. No good can ever accrue to any jiva or creature except by complete surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya. If it ever comes to our knowledge, even as a flash of lightning, through the causeless mercy of Chaitanya's own servants, as to what is the real function of our pure cognition, namely That means pure cognition means ourselves. What is our real function? The individual soul is then and then only. It is then and then only that we can be saved from the counsel of our fellow mortals in this realm of darkness of ignorance. But ah, the curse of our fate. Many are still found to be wholly averse to investigation of the truth. They are awfully busy with many other activities. But such nonsensical, non-essential activities are but an index of ignorance and of aversion to accept the unmixed blessings. When he pointed out that Krishna was the only word and is the only meaning as well in all languages, all scripts, there was a great consternation between his pupils of secular learning. Who are we referring to here? Yes, Nimai Pandit. When he pointed out, remember when we were hearing last night when he came back from Gaya, he was completely different. Before then he was a teacher of grammar and he was brilliant and very, very worldly, wise and proud. And when he returned, his whole sense of everything had changed and he came back. And Sriman Pandit was saying, there's not a trace of pride in him now. And everyone was astonished. Nimai Pandit has become a Vaishnava. Just think if you were to come back and say, President, who's the Prime Minister again?
John Howard
has become a Vaishnava. Everybody would be like, wow. You know, and there's not a trace of worldly pride. He's not interested in anything mundane. He's just saying, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Everybody would be like, what? You know, this would be the most amazing thing. He's in charge of the country. He's the greatest so-called person in the country. And he's become a Vaishnava. So Nimai Pandit was more significant, obviously, than a mere politician. But he was so established in this society of learned, worldly-minded Sanskrit grammarians. And he was the top, he was the best of all of them. Because, of course, he's the Supreme Lord, so he is exhibiting his opulence of all knowledge, all knowing, all wealth, all fame. So he had all knowledge at his disposal, and he exhibited it so fully. And everybody, all the Vaishnavas, they loved him, but they were sad because he was so worldly minded. Just like if we came here and I sat down and started giving you a class and explaining to you about grammar roots in Sanskrit, you would perhaps listen for a little while politely, but it wouldn't do the same thing to your heart if we're hearing about Krishna. So he was like that, and he came back and he was totally different. And he took his classes over again, and everything, all the brilliance of his knowledge was not there anymore. He was very, very, very simple. But of course he was as brilliant because he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he was saying only one thing, everything means Krishna, everything means Krishna. And his students were trying to get some typical standard grammatical learning from him. And they were sitting very closely listening to him. And while he was speaking, he would be crying and he would sometimes fall to the ground and faint. And after his speech, he'd say to his students, did I make any sense? Did I tell you anything on the subject? And they would say, no, you've only been telling us all about Krishna. So here it is saying, when he pointed out that Krishna is the only word and is also the only meaning, the only object of connotation, as well as in all languages and of all scripts, there was a great consternation among his pupils of secular learning. But lovers and seekers of the truth began to flock around his lotus feet for education in transcendental literature. But the service of the holy name, who is the life and soul of this transcendental learning, is not possible unless and until one takes up his abode here in Sridham. And the service of the holy desire of Krishna is not possible without the method of successful service of Krishna's name. So this is one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings that I always found quite intriguing, because it's as if there's a lot of things locked in there. And he makes some very strong statements that you cannot serve Krishna's name without serving the Dham. So then I would naturally find myself asking, why? What does he mean by this? What is the significance of the Dham? Why can't you serve the Nam without the Dham? And on my own limited level, through my thoughts on this subject, I could see that just as Srila Prabhupada is saying, it is not complete just to chant Krishna's name. Now that sounds like a contradiction, because we say it is complete to chant Krishna's name. But for a progressive student of the chanting of Krishna's name, Krishna's pastimes, or the reality of Krishna as a transcendental entity, must come about. And if that doesn't happen, then your chanting of his names will stay on the material platform. Prakrita Bhakta. Prakrita means material. A material devotee is somebody who still identifies himself with designations. Sarvupadi Vinirmuktam. We have to give up the designations. So we change our designations when we come in touch with Krishna consciousness. Previously, we had a career, we had some position in society. I am this, I am that, and if somebody met you, who are you? You would give the designation of yourself in a worldly sense. And when we become devotees, our designation changes. We say now, I am a devotee, I come from the Melbourne Temple, I come from Perth, I do this, I do that. Our activities, our explanation, our presentation of how we think of ourselves has now become linked with Krishna. And this is an enormously big step. There is no going back from this for a devotee. They want to always have this in the foreground. This is who I am. And as they raise their family and as they do their various activities, they perceive that they're different than other people who haven't made this huge step. But still this isn't enough. And we should clearly understand this, that there is a further step, that if we don't come to the next step, then we will remain what is called a prakrita bhakta, or a material devotee. And why could you make such a harsh term to say somebody is a materialistic devotee? That sounds like as if that's somebody who doesn't follow the process, doesn't chant their rounds, they're a materialistic devotee. I am not a materialistic devotee. I'm a very, very serious devotee. I chant my rounds, I do these various things. But who are you? This is who I am. I'm a woman. You know, I'm from Australia. I'm this kind of person. I'm like this. I'm not very good at that. I'm good at this. I'm this, I'm that. So many things. But I'm still, my reference point is still, the me is still my body and my mind. We must understand this. This is only the first transformation that takes place to transform our I identity to one related to Krishna. There's much further to go. And this becomes possible as one begins to understand the reality of who is Krishna. And until we understand who is Krishna, we cannot understand how we have a relationship with him, because we don't know enough about him. So what is this called? What is this stage called when we're trying to understand who is Krishna? Does anyone know what this is called? Sambandha Gyan. So in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, he was very, very scientific. Krishna consciousness is not something haphazard. It's not something that you just join and you become a devotee and all job is done. It is a cultivation. And the cultivation, as seriously as you cultivate, that is how deeply you will go into the science of the transformational effect of Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada didn't come to bring a society to create peace and harmony on the worldly plane and give us happy family life and give us a nice place to live and a peaceful income so that we have no more problems. He did not come to give that. He came to give us knowledge of Krishna. He came to give us the process of development of our Krishna consciousness. So here I will go into these three things. I will take the different words that he has referred to in regards, first of all, to the chanting of the holy name. He said, it is available to us all, and it extricates us from the wrong understandings. By chanting, we become free of the wrong understanding. What is the first wrong understanding that we become free of when we chant? We're not the body. This is the first one. But we see that it's that we can become free a little bit. We honestly cannot become free of that for a very long time. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his book Madhurya Kadambini, he gives us a little stretch so we can understand what we're in for. Otherwise, we can become prematurely disappointed in the effects of Krishna consciousness when we see that they are not manifesting with the dynamic way that we were hoping they would in the time that we were expecting that they should. So he explains that when one has just a faint kind of a sense that I'm living my life and I'm pretty happy and everything is good, but maybe I should take in a little bit of spirituality. That is the very beginning. And he says at that time, one's spiritual aspect, the spiritual aspect of one's life, is like infinitesimal at that point. And the material, ahankar, he says the ahankar and the mamata. Do we know what ahankar means? But how can we put that in one word? No. Yes, but this is not the one. One letter. I. And mamata. Does anyone know this word? Srila Prabhupada used to talk these two, yes? Mine. The I and mine is totally material at that point. And there's just the faintest trace that one is starting to think that I have some spiritual characteristics. So then he traces, just like as one goes up like a scale, as one gets more and more heavy and more developed, the other one gradually reduces. But he speaks and he says as he gives a definition of how one transits from this I and mine in the material world to actually I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine, which Srila Prabhupada said, this is our real identity. I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. And that identity, I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine, cannot actually be experienced whilst we identify with our material body. It's not a mental change. It's actually a transcendental reality. It's a complete transitional state that we have to achieve. So he says, when you get to the middle, what is the middle of the devotional steps? In the middle. 1, 2, 3, 4. After Natanvriti? Nista. When your faith becomes so fixed that nothing shifts it, you have no difficulty with inattentiveness, you have no hunger in the heart for anything of this world, you have no indifference to Krishna, you have no laziness, no changing your mind, everything is fixed. When your faith gets to that point, any of us can look and examine, is my faith at that point? I have no thirst for anything in the world. I'm completely fixed on Krishna. When one gets to that point, still this ahankar and mamata, the sense of I and mine in this world, is purnam. So what does purnam mean? Om purnam. Perfect and complete. So just think for a minute, even when you get to that stage of steady Krishna conscious activity, your sense of identity with the mind and body is still perfect and complete. So we should understand the process of Krishna consciousness is not one that will take 5 years, 10 years, I've been chanting for 30 years and I haven't got anywhere yet. This is all just immaturity. When we think like this, it's a very, very deep process, and a process that generally takes many, many, many lifetimes. Because we get to a certain point of transformation in one life and we think, oh, this is too much. I can't cope with the idea that this is not my family and I'm not this kind of a person and that I could lose something that I think is me, I and mine. I can't handle it. stop. And so what happens is Krishna says, all right, and it slows down. And we take a certain step in one birth. Next birth we try again. We can also see the beginning of life is difficult because one is very playful and very distracted by the childhood tendencies, and the end of life is very difficult because one is very aged and distracted by the invalidity of old age. So there's only a certain period of life that's possible to give your full vital energy to Krishna consciousness, and that time is very difficult because we have so much energy, we want to do something in the world. We want to get a career and get on with things and take care of family and expand and so on. So Prahlad Maharaj said, there is no time in your life that it is easy to practice Krishna consciousness. So therefore he said, when he was speaking to young boys, little boys, he said, you should chant Hare Krishna and learn about Krishna now. They said, but we're just little boys. We can't do that. And he said, no, no, you should do it now because there's no time that's going to become easier. You must start now. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to start us now, wherever we were, wherever we are. And he wanted us to continue throughout our life to cultivate Krishna consciousness as best that we can. And to give us the hope, and also it is true, he said that you can become Krishna conscious and go back to the spiritual world in one birth, and it is true. But he also in other places explains what type of mentality one has to adopt in order to do that. That means that one has to become exclusively determined. I don't want anything in this world. He said, if you have a desire for one sweet, just one sweet, then you have to stay here. So this sounds very unfair and rigid. Like, it's not fair. Why? Just because I want a sweet, I have to stay here in this world of suffering and pain and endure so many things? Yes, because you want something of this world of matter. Until you want nothing of this world of matter, you will be obliged to take another birth. So I find for myself, personally, as I have grown older and death becomes like a real and present reality, it's not something abstract and far away and hard to conceive of, but it's very real and it sits just there. Because any time you see people die and you realize that that's also my destination. It's very favorable for devotional life if one has the desire for devotional life, because you realize that I have to start becoming more serious. If I don't become more serious in this birth, and certainly there can be many, many more before this perfection, beyond ahankar that is punam at nista, right up to the stage when I'm qualified to actually enter into the spiritual abode of Krishna, how am I cannot do all that work. So all I can do is work as hard as I can and have confidence and faith that Krishna will position me well to continue with that study if I am not able to complete everything within the span of one very, very short and very insignificant life. And not only that, one lifespan that has not begun with dedication to Krishna as its goal. It began with a very, very strong appetite for worldliness. And then by Srila Prabhupada's mercy or a devotee's mercy, we have changed our course. Now I am on the material bhakta platform. But there is a long ways to go. And we should know this. The reason why we should know it is because it will make us more able to judge what is taking place around us. And it will make us more less impatient. Just like if you're going with children on a journey somewhere and it takes an hour to get to the place and they have no sense of time. So you're driving in the car and you're saying, are we here yet? Are we here yet? It's bored. I'm bored. It's boring in the car. I want to get out of the car. Are we here yet? But an adult can say, we have an hour. It will take us an hour to get there and continue driving with tolerance and patience of the inconveniences. So we must grow beyond the stage of childishness in our devotional life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also addresses this, that men who are childish in their spiritual life, they think in this way and think in that way. So when we read his words, we realize that we're quite childish. childish meaning that we're beginners on the path of devotional service. And knowledge of this creates a balance, and it also creates some humility with which we can learn more. So back to the chanting. It removes prejudice. It helps to extricate us from wrong understanding by chanting Krishna's name. And it can help us to settle into the idea of serving Krishna's desire. So we see this for ourselves, that we have changed our ways, we've changed our course, and even though we're working in the world and raising a family or doing so many things, at the same time, we wish to have them related to Krishna. And this is the idea of serving Krishna's desire. It is coming. But then, the Naam Seva will very quickly bring us to the end, will very quickly bring someone to the end who develops an attachment for the Dham, and that will also free one from attachment to one's home as being everything. So the Dham, what does one do when one goes to the Dham? Hands up anyone who has not been to a holy Dham. Well, in one sense you have, because Srila Prabhupada uses the word Dham sometimes because he wants to open up Krishna consciousness to the whole world and not make any limitation for anyone at all to experience any of Krishna's arrangements. So the first Dham that we approach is we approach the temple. Srila Prabhupada uses this in one of his explanations of the Dham. He says, the Dham Mathura Vas. To live in Mathura is means to live in the atmosphere of the temple. So this is the beginning of approach of the Dham. And when we go to the places where the Naam has appeared in this world, so we think, at least I can speak for myself, I think that a name can't appear like a person. If I say, this is the place where my name appeared, it sounds funny. This is the place where his name appeared in this world. But Krishna and his name, so we have to become very vigilant in reconnecting with our intelligence. We have to have an active intelligence to reconnect things so that the meaning, as we're speaking, it becomes relevant to us. Otherwise, it will go over our head and we will lose the meaning, the significance. So Krishna and his name are the same. And his name, or Krishna, not in the form of his name, but in his transcendental form, he appears within the Dham. Holy saints serve there and tell of its value. This also should be in connection with the temple. Holy saints should be serving there and telling of its value. And when one develops an attachment for the temple, I think all of the Indian community who are here, to greater or lesser degrees, depending on their personal experience, can understand that the only way to regulate or balance attachment for family life is by developing an appreciation, in that sense, for the temple. Because then we start to want to make our children more spiritually conscious. We start to want to not be all the time busy with work and actually come to something further than that. Life takes a different dimension. But if you do not recognize, he says, the dignity of the Dham, then you will not be interested in Dham Seva and you will not have so much faith in the deity. So the positive of that is, as you recognize the dignity of the Dham, you will want to do Dham Seva and you will have faith in the deity. So we can take that as a positive. And naturally, as we have faith in the deity, we develop our faith in the Naam, in the name, the transcendental name. So I want to ask you now, can you tell me, what does it mean to serve the Dham? Now we're not only speaking of the temple, because the temple, we have a difficulty sometimes, along with the understanding that it is a Dham, that we think it is located in Albert Park, it is this building and that building and so on and so forth. And we fail sometimes to recognize the transcendental nature of a place that we frequent within Melbourne, Victoria. So we'll go instead for a moment, and those who have not been there, they will surely very soon have their opportunity to visit the Dham. Especially here he's speaking about Sridham, which is Sridham Mayapur. So what are the ways that we can serve the Dhamma? By contemplating the Lord's pastimes. And how does one first, what does one must do before one can contemplate the Lord's pastimes? Yes. Hear the Lord's pastimes, contemplate the Lord's pastimes. Yes? Hear from devotees. What does one hear from devotees in the Dham? Yeah, about Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. What else?
Serve the devotees who are glorifying the Dham.
Yes, serve the devotees who are glorifying the Dham. Also one can serve the devotees who come to the Dham. Because they come and there's so many inconveniences there. They sometimes don't have the right things, so we can serve them. And what is a very special way that's unique to the Dham that we can serve the Dham?
Visiting the Dham?
Visiting the Dham, but what do we do when we visit the Dham?
Prasadam.
We can do prasadam here also.
Parikrama.
Parikrama, yes. One can go on parikrama. And parikrama is so important. We may not be accustomed with how important it is, or we may in the beginning when we go on parikrama, it's not so exciting. I remember the first time I went on parikrama was in 1974, and Srila Prabhupada was having the first Mayapur festival. And we came, my husband and I, we were living at that time in Hong Kong, which wasn't a very nice place, but it was a materialistic place, so we had all the normal conveniences of life. And I was anticipating a lot of culture shock in coming first time to India. And there were so many inconveniences, so I was not really at home when we got to Mayapur. And then when we got there, there was only one building had been constructed. That's the building now called the Lotus Building. And that only hadn't been finished. So upstairs where the ladies were to stay was the one big room, which I think now is used, it was used by the GBC on the first floor, and now I think it's used for tours or something like that. And that room, it was one big room, and they hadn't finished the floors. It had cement with cement powder and all the other crudities of a half-finished floor to deal with, rough, unfinished. There was no finishing to the surface. And all the ladies who came to that festival had to stay in that room. And we didn't know about the different difficulties because we were not at all, no one was familiar with India, such as the mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And so everyone had to buy a mosquito net. And basically I remember the whole room was like you would see in India in the evening, all the net, like a net city. It was one mosquito net next to the other, next to the other, next to the other, next to the other. And in the corner of the room was Srila Prabhupada's sister, who had come up for this particular event from Calcutta. And she was very extraordinary because she looked identical to Srila Prabhupada. But at the same time, as she looked like Srila Prabhupada, of course she was a woman and she didn't speak any English. And she had this habit that she would, in just her slip and nothing else, she would walk out of the room and down the corridor and round to the bathroom. And she was an old lady, rather fat. And in the Nectar of Devotion, it describes how when Krishna was sometimes, he was teasing some of the gopis, the elderly gopis, and he would say, "Your breasts look like string beans." And he would call them different, he would in different ways insult them, and then they would speak back to him. So she was like that. She was very, very old, and she'd had many, many children, and she looked like an old cow. And she would wander, wavering backwards and forwards, down with her old body, and she'd wander round the corner out and into the bathroom, and she'd come back. Because she was very, very cultured. And so the culture, of course, meant that she would not wear any of her normal cloth into the bathroom. And so she was in her element, and we were all young, new Westerners, and we were all a little shocked at what she would do. And some of the young men at some point complained to Prabhupada and said, "Your sister, Prabhupada, she's not properly dressed." And Srila Prabhupada became very angry at one point, and he said, "You Westerners," he said, "she is an old lady, and still you cannot give up sex life." So he was very heavy. He didn't say anything to stop her. She was very, very special and unique. So she was in the corner, and she would do whatever she was doing, old, elderly Indian lady who we couldn't relate to at all. And we were all under our mosquito nets, hovering around, eating only potatoes because that was all that was in season, and many people getting diarrhea regularly because there was only a hand pump outside and that was the only source of water. And this was Sri Dham Mayapur, and we then went on parikram, and we went in buses and they would take us to different places. And the whole experience to me was totally untastable. It was completely, it was so extremely untastable that it took me actually many years before I wanted to ever go back to Mayapur again. But to speak of going on a parikram, the whole thing left this terrible, horrible taste in my mind, in my mouth. But then we went from there, we were all taken by one, they hired a carriage on a train, and all the devotees were taken to Calcutta. We boarded the train, and we all sat in the compartment together, or two train carriages, and we went to Vrindavan. And for me personally, I don't know about other people, but as soon as I got to Vrindavan, as soon as I got on the train, I thought, wow, we're going to have to do this again. That was terrible. I think I should prepare myself. So I decided to prepare myself for Vrindavan by reading the Krishna book. And so I just sat up on my bunk and I read and read and read and read and was trying to think, wow, I hope this will be a little bit better than that was. Mm-hmm. And so we got off in Mathura and we were taken by Tonga, by horse cart to Vrindavan, and we stayed in the Fogal Ashram, which now anyone who goes to Vrindavan, the Fogal Ashram is a big prestigious ashram near to the Krishna Balaram temple. At that time it was just a series of small rooms, and Srila Prabhupada was staying at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, which was incompleted, and we would have our programs at Fogal Ashram and then we would go and see Prabhupada in his room, which was the only part of the Krishna Balaram temple that was complete. The rest of the temple was still a construction site. And there in Vrindavan, because we had a little more freedom, or perhaps because of the transcendental nature of Vrindavan, or perhaps because, for me, because of the preparation, I felt much more at home than I did on my first experience of Mayapur Dham. And we went on Prikram. And I have to admit, I was very disappointed when I saw Govardhan Hill, because I had been reading, and Govardhan Hill was supposed to be enormous. And we drove up, and it looked like a pile of rocks. And I thought, this is Govardhan Hill? Anyway, never mind. And so we went around and we looked at the different places. And then when it was time to leave Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada said, we went to see him to return to Hong Kong, he said to us personally, he said, how do you like Vrindavan? And so I just said quite spontaneously, I said, oh, it's wonderful, Prabhupada, because I had been able to relax and actually appreciate the nature of a dham there, which I couldn't do because of the culture shock in Mayapur. And Srila Prabhupada responded immediately, quickly, and he said, then you should come and live here. And I just laughed and laughed and laughed because he had made so much effort to get us to go back to Hong Kong. And I thought, he's so tricky. He's saying, you come and live here. I just laughed and laughed and laughed and looked at him and I said, you just sent us back to Hong Kong, because we were trying in many ways to get out of going back there. And he was trying in many ways to get us to go back there. And he'd fixed it and we were going back. And now he's saying, come and live here. I just laughed. And he laughed and he looked at us and he said, no, you should come for some months every year. And then he just left it because he knew where I had caught him. And so then we had to return to Hong Kong. And then later, in different times over many years, we'd come back to Mayapur, come back to Vrindavan, go to Jagannath Puri. And mainly those three are the pastime places of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna Leela. Those three are very, very important. There are others, there's Kurukshetra and other sacred places, but these three are of most greatest significance. And gradually, and then ironically, or amazingly, or I should perhaps say, because he blessed us in that way, Srila Prabhupada blessed us, 9 years later we actually went there and we ended up going there to live. And so we lived there for a series of 12 years. We were living and we had the good fortune to have some service there. Because practically speaking, nowadays people go to Vrindavan, it's a fashionable place, it's a social place, it's a pleasant place. They've got solved the water problems, they've solved the weather conditions with air conditioning, they've solved this, they've got mobile phones, they've got email across the road, they've got big fancy cars, can take you anywhere you want, so you have no inconvenience whatsoever. And of course all of these things are contradictory to the Dham. And so now the quality of people who come to the Dham is twofold. One is that it allows very sincere people who have a worldly needs to come, but it also allows people who just want to sightsee to come, people who want to socialize to come, or people who want to come to find a partner, they can come. Or Indians who want to come and have a look at the Westerners, and that's their only reason for coming, they can also come. Or Westernized Indians from Delhi can come, and then they can party, and they can have a New Year's Eve party, which you can hear now in Vrindavan on New Year's Eve. You can hear them celebrating New Year's Eve. You can see them celebrating Christmas. They'll write Happy New Year on the road. And people who are illiterate in terms of the Dham, they think all of that is quite nice and fine. But they have no understanding of the Dham. And therefore they do not, by coming to the Dham, they don't enter the Dham. Because they never give up their prakriti activities. They're never giving up their material sense of identity. They're believing that the new year is of some significance that is relevant in the transcendental eternal Dham. And so therefore they get a shadow only of the Dham. But one who really comes to the Dham comes because they want to develop their relationship with Krishna. And by hearing and understanding Krishna's pastimes, it eradicates for us imperceptibly the idea that we all hold because of the influence of Maya, that actually my activities are significant and they are pastimes. My characteristics are very interesting. My paraphernalia is the most important thing to me. What I do in my life is the most important thing to me. And they may create that transformation, as I was describing, past the stage of Nista into the realm where one starts to think of Krishna as a supreme person, and I have a spiritual identity, and that spiritual identity is meant to serve Krishna in that transcendental abode. Not serve him on the shadow of the abode, but actually enter into that transcendental relationship with Krishna. And this subject matter is very perplexing to one who has not had this experience of the Dham, of the reality of Krishna's pastimes. Just like if you have lived in Vrindavan or Mayapur for any amount of time, even a month, even a short time, when you come back to the West and people tell you, I'm not sure, even devotees, you talk to devotees and you say, Krishna will help you, and they look kind of confused, like Krishna, Krishna, Krishna is sort of a name. You know, chant Hare Krishna, but Krishna. But when you've lived in the Dham, you know there's the Jamuna River, there's Govardhan Hill, there's Varshana, there's Nandagram. Krishna did this here, he did that there, he did this here, he did that. And when that becomes firmly established in one's heart, Krishna becomes very, very, very real. And as he becomes more and more and more real, then one begins to find oneself curious to know what is beyond this identity, which is now absolutely, fixedly absorbing me, and I think of this as reality. And it is not reality. And I cannot get my mind around that. You begin to be able to get little inklings that this is not reality. And just for a transcendentalist, just as hazy as Krishna and transcendental spiritual world is for us, the material world with all its seemingly pressing relative needs and important things is as hazy for a transcendentalist in reciprocation. Because he is not Purnam in his ahankar and mamata. His ahankar and mamata is zero. Zero comes when one develops prema bhakti. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness is scientific. Srila Prabhupada would say this. And these three things, engaging in the service of Krishna, engaging in the service of the Dham, and engaging in chanting the holy name, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is linking these three and recognizing them as essential for one's matured advancement in Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop here. If anyone has any questions, please, there's a few more minutes. Yes.
Would you consider this farm as Dham?
It's a dham to the degree that the residents who live here understand that every single atomic particle of this place belongs to the deity and is only meant for the service of deity and not for themselves, their family, or any social obligation other than the service of the deity. Then it becomes a dham. But as soon as what happens is, if we're not on such a platform of realization, then we come and we say, yes, this is a dham, and it becomes a dham by that consciousness. But then we adulterate it with feelings like, you know, I would like this, I would like that, it should be like this, and our personal ahankar and mamata comes in, and that obscures the dham-like atmosphere. So a place that's in the material world, like in a location, Melbourne, Perth, Australia, it becomes a dham by the quality of the sadhus that live there. Because it is already Krishna's, but saintly people see that, and materialistic people don't see that. So materialistic people see the whole world as materialistic. And so what does materialistic mean? It's meant for my enjoyment. But a dham is not meant for our enjoyment. A dham is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So therefore somebody who comes to the dham, even this place, and serves like that, yes, definitely, most definitely, it can be a dham. But if one doesn't have that consciousness, then it can be a nice place, a place I really like, a place out in the country, a pleasant place to live, a good lifestyle. But those things can have a linkage to the I and mine, ahankara and mamata principle. So Prabhupada wanted us to turn these places into dhams. Yes, exactly. And then you find, like, you can make your house into a dham. You can install the deity, or you can have deities there, and you can say, oh, this house belongs to the deities. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches us that in his songs. His children belong to the deities. My wife belongs to the deities, or my money belongs to the deities. Now let me just try and always remember that. And it's very challenging, but it's very, very enlivening. And ultimately, that's what Krishna consciousness means. So there's also the central temple, because if we try to do that independently, it's very difficult actually to do it. So Prabhupada didn't want us to make many centers independent of the central one, but he did want us to make the central one and these ones as well. This is the primary one and these ones as well. They come from the strength of the way we treat the one that is fully established by him himself. And it's a state of consciousness. You may not find that everyone is treating that place with that kind of consciousness, but you can. If you want that kind of consciousness, you must, if you want that kind of consciousness. And even in the dham, as I was telling you, in Vrindavan, you'll see so many people coming there for so many reasons, and the dham is like a kalpa vriksha tree. It will give them what they want. Krishna says, as they want, I make their faith steady. So somebody comes and he feels, I got so much reciprocation, and so I really feel all sorts of things. But if we want to have a dham, the actual dham that we really require is within our own heart. Because as we serve Krishna's desire, as we chant Krishna's name, as we understand Krishna's dham, Krishna's place, then we wish to have it in our own heart, and then we can see Krishna's dham everywhere. But this is advanced. And because we're not advanced, Srila Prabhupada is saying, come to this platform gradually by following a cultivation, as we're hearing in Nectar of Devotion. Cultivate your words. Use your words to speak about Krishna. Cultivate your mind. Think about Krishna. Remember Krishna. Remember Krishna in Vrindavan with his devotees. Remember Krishna at Kurukshetra, speaking to Arjuna. Learn his words. When you can think, oh Krishna, he spoke this. Krishna is this. Learn who Krishna is. Who is he? Why should we make such a big fuss of him? He might be just one Hindu god. There's so many. Who is he? Why is he different than? Ask questions. Find out these things. This is called Sambandha Gyan. The foundation of our love will come from our knowledge. It's not to be an intellectual. We don't want to be intellectuals. We want to know about Krishna. So as we know about Krishna, yes, we can transform ourselves, our consciousness, our house, everything.
Just one last thing.
Yes.
So, only have the retreat and the other activities in the farm now and then so that we can make this time very real?
It will happen over time. It must happen because every town and every village is supposed to be transcendentalized. It will happen also by the intense desire of sincere devotees who are coming, who are serving. But don't think that it's an easy thing to do. And also don't think that the time factor or the material world is a friendly place, because neither of those factors are. We're here for some time. So we can make, it's like in Western schools they have what's called a relay race. And you have a baton, and there's a team on both ends, and two teams. And you run holding the baton to the other end, and you hand it to someone. And then they run back, and they hand it to somebody else. And four people have to run, and then you see who won. So it's a little bit like that. We have the baton right now. So we should do everything that we can to make this dharma revealed. It's already been seen that something is supposed to be here. But then we have to work very hard. And then in future others will come. And they will do things. We will come for some time, and if we're very dedicated, just like I was visiting one place in last year in my travels, I went to Hungary, and I saw Shivaram Swami has started a new Vrajadham in Hungary, and it was really, really nice. But of course, it was really nice then, and the material energy is such you don't know if it's going to be very nice in 10 years from now, because the material energy is going like this all the time. But it was nice when I was there. And he was, one of his devotees was expressing that his mood was, because he's established deities of Radhashyama Sunda who are extremely beautiful, and he has a very personal way of worshipping them. So he tells the devotees who are his disciples who are living there, he says, that I am making my plan how I can return next birth to continue taking care of Radhashyama Sunda. This is like we're saying a mental cultivation, like when my husband was saying, you can be thinking, oh, look at those boys out there laughing and running, I wish I could do that. And that's a subtle way that you're creating your next body by all the worldly things I wish and want. They'll all come onto your list of what you're going to get if you deserve them. But so similarly, one can wish and wish and wish. I would so much like to see this place prosper. And then it seems like a snowballing effect. The devotees who have dedication will come back again. But not coming back as we came, where we start our life without any interest. And not coming back kind of in a wishy-washy way, but coming back very much enhanced in their devotional service and relieved of so many encumbrances that we're carrying in this life, and very much eager to wholeheartedly get into the further development of Lord Chaitanya's movement. So this will happen. This is clear. And so we can, if we want to see this dharma prosper, we have to not only do things now, but we have to cultivate that. And I want to come back and do more. I want to develop this. Because it will take many, many years before it will become what we envision it to be. Yes?
Jagatani Mataji, you said something, one sweet.
Yes, and you have to stay here. Because there's nothing material there. So if there's anything here you want, even a fraction of something that's material, you have to stay here to get it. So that's why one has to really understand that Krishna consciousness, it's important that we become serious in our devotional service and not keeping this for me and this for Krishna, this for me and this for Krishna. We can't help that in the beginning. It's excusable in the beginning. But if we go on and on with that mood, then we won't rise up to the higher levels of devotional service. And when there should be many inquiries, how can I make that advancement? I have this problem, I have this problem, how can I possibly do that? This is an honest person's, if one is listening and thinking, well, I don't know if I could do that, that's a very healthy sign. And then we start looking for some inspiration, some strength to come. And Krishna reciprocates immediately because he wants us to come back there. It's not like he's saying, oh, I'm sorry, back to the end of the queue, you're not qualified. And it's not that it's such a high attainment. Also, this is quite astounding. It's not a high attainment. It's normal living. But we're perverse now. We're in prison now. We're not free citizens. We might be wandering free in Victoria, Australia. But we're in the material energy means that we've taken a wrong turn in our heart. So we may think, oh, it's so rare to go there. No, So many living entities are there. We belong there. We already have it. We're already pure. But we've covered our consciousness in such a way that we've deviated from our pure inner nature. And now we're trying to go back to what we already have. Even Jesus spoke of this when he told the story of the prodigal son. How the son, he went out of his home and he wanted to taste what worldly life was like and enjoyment. And he did so many things. But gradually, by his mistakes and his wrong endeavors, he ended up on the street. And then his father was looking for him all the time. And he sent a messenger. When he heard about where he was so happy to hear, and he brought him home. And he said, he now changed his whole mentality. He said, I'll just stay outside. I don't belong here. And his father said, no, you come right inside, and took him inside and reestablished him as his son. So this is what we want. We want to come to our real position. We should know that. It's not like a very severe examination and 99% isn't enough by some callous personality who doesn't like us. It's completely the opposite. It's somebody who loves us and is waiting for us to make this transition from material things and will stay with us until we accomplish it. And will guide us and assist us and give us all facilities until it's done. And when it's done, we can go. And until it's done, we can't, because matter and spirit are two different energies.
What you're saying is, Eke Kuru Nandana. Eke Kuru Nandana. That should be the desire.
Yes. Yeah. Now, before we go any further, Jamuna Acharya, can you take the cloth and things off? So I had brought with me, I wasn't sure when to open them up, but I had brought some small dioramas from our Gopinath Dham. Aravind, that's what we're trying to do. We're living in Perth, Western Australia, and we have a property there. And we're trying to make that place into a dham. We know that at any time, the material energy can take it back, because we're in the material world. It can say, I want this back, and Krishna can say, it must be taken back. But in the meantime, we're trying to make a transcendental place there. A place in which Krishna's pastimes and hearing about Krishna and chanting Krishna's name are the most important activities. And so this is something that should inspire you, although every place has its own specialities, here, that you should try in any way you can to make this place to work as a transcendental place. I remember when I came here long, long years ago and they put up signs everywhere. This is Nandagram, this is this place, this is that place, and so on and so forth. So it may not be the time for these things right now, but this is what a dham means. It has to be like a facsimile of the transcendental dhams. It can be like, you can create a Mayapur-like atmosphere, you can create sometimes new Jagannath Puri, on New Vrindavan, but we should take from the original dham and try to bring that atmosphere and that mood to these places in the West, which are barren without this. Not attractive. We find the technology attractive, but actually there's a barrenness in this culture that we want to give some opportunity to fill. So there are a couple more questions quickly. Yes, okay. So you can ask me individually at some other point. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you. So tomorrow morning we'll hear something about these little pastimes and about the transcendental nature of rasa, which is also another subject that Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur speak about. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hare.